Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
Time for Vanessa and Gallant.
That sounds good. I'll have that.
Featuring Vanessa Richardson.
This is not a common opinion. This is not a popular opinion.
And Paul Gallant.
Tom Brady is my Lord and Savior.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
There goes Simeon, and the pitch is a strike. The throw on the money out at third base. What a throw by Machete.
That could not have been more on the money.
All right, so the Astros did lose 4-3 last night to the Rangers, but that was a cool play by Machete. A lot of a reaction from that on Twitter. Fromber with yet another consecutive quality start, so good for him. And we're rolling along on a Wednesday. I'm Vanessa Richardson, Paul Gallant, Sean Mapes with you as always. How you guys doing?
I'm doing well.
Hump day.
It is. And it is football eve for the NFL. But a little frustrating, Vanessa, the way that the Astros are not getting in a groove at the plate. And you mentioned the good things last night.
Sure.
Maldonado is a very good defensive player. Framber Valdez is a very consistent starter this year. 1-for-11 with runners in scoring position. And you're playing bums right now. I was thinking that, Vanessa, over the last, I don't know, 10 games or so, that the Astros would be scoring a little bit more. And over the last 10 games, they're averaging 3.1 runs a game.
Just and saying. Part of that, just FYI, they had 9 runs in one of those games.
So yes,
the number may be convoluted.
You. You're right. Look, this is not something to be that concerned about. All I'm saying is you're playing the Rangers. The Rangers suck. Can you score some runs? Just a couple. That's it. Instead of going 1-for-11 with runners in scoring position.
They do play the Rangers again today, and then the Angels and the Tigers and then the Athletics. So as we've talked about, this is a month to get the bats going. It's not like they're going to be playing any teams that they're going to play in the playoffs here. So we hope that they can definitely improve on that. It's not the end of the world, but are you panicked at all?
I mean, let me think about
like, this. Truly, do you think that this is a problem come playoff time?
Yeah, Panic Man's not making an entrance today.
Okay.
Look, this is just a time for you to essentially have batting practice reps. And I don't think very highly of any of what Texas can throw at you. I know that they do have some quality arms and that they actually do have some talent on that team, despite being as bad as they've been this year in the lineup specifically. But, you know, this is a baseball team that has been, compared to years past, the Astros, not as potent of an offense. And you would hope that this would be a time for someone like Yuli Gurriel to wake up. Jeremy Peña, who did have 2 hits last night. This is what I'm hoping to see as we get closer and closer to the playoffs, as these guys first off start to hit, but also start to hit when it matters. There's been a lot of left on base over the last couple of games. It's not like they've been completely invalids.
There's been a lot of left on base all year.
Yeah.
I mean, that's been a consistent runners in scoring position. And if you remember last season, the stats on that were high as well. It's always nice when you have a Mancini or an Altuve or somebody that can do a three-run, you know, get a three-run homer and get things going on the offensive side of the ball, for sure. But yes, it's been frustrating, and that's something that we've noticed throughout the year.
And someone highlighted on the Twitch that Yordan hasn't hit a home run in about a month. And this is, I would say, more than any other Astros player. Right now, this is where you would hope he's able to shake off the cobwebs or the lack of functioning wrists and get back to at least a semblance of what he was. Because if he is hitting the way that he hit earlier this year, I don't see any team in the American League being a problem for the Astros. But if he's not, you never know. All it takes is a couple of weird games against the Tampa Bay Rays or a couple of strange outings against Toronto or some of the other teams, maybe even Seattle, to all of a sudden perhaps hit you when you least expect it.
We had an interesting stat on Astros pregame, and I believe it was that Yordan still has the second most home runs in the American League behind Aaron Judge. Despite the fact that he spent a couple of days on the IL, the weeks probably total. And despite the fact that he hasn't been, after the All-Star break, what he was before the All-Star break.
Yeah, that's interesting. And, you know, Shohei Ohtani has weirdly been drawing half of the MVP votes in baseball, in spite of Aaron Judge clearly being way better than everyone else in the American League. I like Shohei Ohtani, by the way, too. I just, can we please give the award to a guy that's on a team that's winning? But yeah, that's surprising. I did not know that Alvarez had not been passed by Ohtani. I would have figured by this point, just because of what a rough last month it's been for Alvarez, that would have happened.
Framber Valdez did throw his, like I said, 23rd consecutive quality start. He held them, the Rangers, to four runs, but only two were earned. So he was able to preserve that. That was another thing that some people were confused about. And then Brian McTaggart broke it down on the Twitter.
He has done very well this season and deserves a lot of credit for becoming consistent. I feel like at this point I should just say, I feel confident in him come playoff time to be able to be consistent for a whole series. And maybe against all these teams in the American League, I would say that. I just wonder about the World Series because that was the last stage that he was on where he struggled. It is crazy, though, that he has had all of these quality starts in a row since that World Series.
Guys, I have butterflies in my stomach.
Butterflies?
And it's not because I met a muscular man. And it's not because...
Did you meet a muscular man, though?
I
meet a lot of muscular men.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It's not because I met somebody special. It's not because I have some amazing trip planned. I have butterflies because tomorrow we're going to watch the Bills play the Rams.
Yeah.
And it's going to be glorious. And football is back, baby. 7:20 p.m. tomorrow. How excited are you guys? It's here.
I am very excited. This is a damn good opening game. And that they are giving us the team that everyone has crowned before the season in Buffalo, along with the defending Super Bowl champs who are going to get their rings before the game, I imagine. That's a damn good way to kick things off.
The NFL schedule gods know what they're doing.
Now, are we going to feel this way once the game is done? That this was like the best possible matchup to put on Thursday? Who knows? But I'm pretty excited about it.
I think we're all also excited for Bills Chiefs when that eventually comes around because that is the coin toss revenge playoff game. But it's been a long time since we've had football. I do want to pass along some breaking news. Head coach Lovie Smith said Texans teammates have selected Davis Mills, Brandon Cooks, Jerry Hughes, Christian Kirksey, and John Weeks as the team captains.
John Weeks,
per Drew Doherty, who works for the Texans.
So legend.
We'll get more into the Texans next segment, but I am excited for the fact that we have some actual NFL news happening and some actual NFL games happening. And they start tomorrow.
Yeah, keep it in your pants. Yeah, I'm excited too, you know.
It's been a long time.
Look, this is a year or two where it shouldn't be the worst to watch the Texans, as we'll talk about a little bit later. I mean, what a ringing endorsement that is for everyone living here.
Hey, we are impressed by the Bills, though. And a lot of people have been impressed by the Bills. Jalen Ramsey, on the other hand, does not want to gas the Bills up too much ahead of that Rams-Bills matchup tomorrow.
I ain't gonna lie, y'all. I'm not about to sit up here and boost them up like y'all might want, like maybe other people doing. I ain't doing that. I ain't gonna be extra that good, you know what I mean? But we good too over here, so we'll see him on Thursday.
He was not in a tube, by the way. Just the audio from the press conference was bad. But yeah, I like that. I like that a lot of players get up there. Cooper Kupp, Matt Savitz, oh, well, man, they're a great team, blah, blah, blah. I like that Jalen Green's like, we're not gassing them up.
So, well, someone needs to stop gassing them up. I got to say, look, I get it. Buffalo, they had an awesome game against the Patriots in the first round of the playoffs and in the second round of the playoffs, too, against Kansas City. I mean, they're 13 seconds away from going on to the conference championship, and who knows what happens if they play the Cincinnati Bengals. But this is a team that got its ass kicked by the Colts and Jonathan Taylor single-handedly earlier, like a month before that final stretch of the year that they had. This is a team that lost to a Patriots team that threw the ball three times in a game. I think that we're gassing them up a lot. And like, oh, wow, they added Von Miller. Von Miller's like 100 years old. And they also have Tre'Davious White coming back at some point this year. But he has to actually come back at some point this year. They don't have a great running game. All I am saying is, look, the Buffalo Bills are one of the better teams in the AFC. But the offseason gassing that this team has gotten has been nauseating. Is it partly because I'm a Patriots fan? I will 100% admit that.
Well, no, but I will say this. Like, the Bills were my Super Bowl pick, as a lot of people, 3-4 months ago. Great, okay? But it's getting to the point to where if they don't win a Super Bowl, they're a disappointment because everybody is predicting. If you're Josh Allen, you don't want this much attention. You don't want this much of a target on your back.
I just think it's strange that, yeah, of all the teams last year, you know, like, and people have totally forgotten about the Bengals to the point where I'm like, am I disrespecting the Bengals?
The Bengals are actually being disrespected. The Rams may think they're being disrespected. The Bengals, and look, a lot of things had to go their way for them to go to the Super Bowl. A lot. They didn't have the toughest schedule. They had some things happen with their opponents, with injuries. I get it. The Bengals are being disrespected.
They are. They are. I mean, the Bengals should be getting at least some of this love that has been all placed upon the shoulders of the Buffalo Bills.
And how about the team that beat the Buffalo Bills? Like
the Chiefs.
They lose Tyreek Hill, who's a great receiver. But I mean, every year we talk about like, oh, you know, last time a team's paid a receiver X amount, that, you know, when they won the Super Bowl, it's never happened. Whatever. It's like, yeah, I don't think, like, having Tyreek Hill obviously helps. But, I mean, we're still talking about Patrick Mahomes here,
yeah,
who every year is in the AFC Championship game.
It's actually incredible to say that a team that went to the Super Bowl is disrespected.
Yeah, those two teams are looking at the Bills like, we beat the Bills, and we beat the team that beat the Bills. Like, why is everyone handing the Bills the trophy?
We're also talking about a team, too, that's got a lot of, I would say, loser DNA to shake off, like, from the last 20, 25, 30 years before they made it. You know, after they made it to the Super Bowl 4 years in a row and lost every single one, and most of them, like, getting absolutely murdered in all
Bengals
of them except
fans
the one
don't
they lost.
Help themselves because there's a little bit, there's emerged a little bit of, you know, show us some respect, and they may take it a little too
Eli
far.
Apple, that's but, I mean that, yeah.
Right, but they are being disrespected, and I absolutely love the narrative that other teams are. It's like the Rams won the Super Bowl. You guys are not being disrespected. We'll see what happens there. Obviously, we're going to be talking about this throughout the day, but coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, the Texans are rebuilding. Who are the five most important Texans players on this year's roster? We want to know your opinions as well. That's coming up next.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
I don't want to brag, but both Lance Zierlein and John Granato were at my apartment last night.
Whoa. I mean, that's a Tuesday.
That sounds like a brag.
It does. Yeah. Okay, it's because they're in a fantasy football league with somebody else that lives in my building who works at the flagship.
So now you're just humble bragging about the fancy apartment you live in while we, you know, the people, the common man, suffer.
Yeah, John Granato wouldn't be caught dead where I live, all right?
We're rolling along, guys, on a Wednesday, and we have a football game tomorrow. We are very excited about it, but we're also excited about the NFL game that will happen at NRG Stadium on Sunday. The Indianapolis Colts coming in to visit the Houston Texans, a little AFC South matchup week one for both teams, and it's going to be fun. It led us to this subject question because here's the thing. It's no lie that the Texans are rebuilding, retooling, revamping, any which way you want to say it. What players are the most important when you look at this roster and the progress of this team?
Ooh, okay. Do you want to count backwards or do we want to count from 1 to 5?
Well, I think wouldn't we all agree on number one?
Okay. Yeah. Well, actually, I don't know.
Do you have a take? All right, let's start with number five.
I think number five, Jerry Hughes.
All
right, see, we're on the same page.
We are on the same page. You can literally look at my notes.
Veteran defensive player. Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. See it. He probably isn't going to be the player he used to be, but I felt like in that game against the 49ers that he showed up pretty well. And you need to have one wise older fellow, no offense to Jerry Hughes, who is 33, 34 years old. You need someone to, I think, help this defense grow up because you don't really have that and you haven't really had that for a couple of years.
Sean, who's your number five?
I'm going to go with Kenyon Green. Just I need him to be a kind of, you know, a bedrock for that offensive line going forward. And obviously he missed some time in training camp. So I don't know, if he gets off to a slow start, I would understand it. Also, it would be a great, if you're trying to win games, it would be great left tackle, left guard combination.
That's a very good fifth one.
My number five is Jerry Hughes as well. And it is partially because of the defense. We know that I trust this defense under the hand and the guidance of Lovie Smith, who has a lot of experience on the defensive side of the ball. Nick Caserio loves him. And Nick Caserio is somebody that doesn't give out praise very often. And maybe it's because he knows that he's a vet and it's not going to get to his head and he's not worried about that. But I know that they are all in on Jerry Hughes. And you and I, boots on the ground, not to brag, we were at that press conference where they talked about how highly they think of him. I think he's going to be a leader on the defense. I think he has the potential to be the proverbial glue guy. So Jerry Hughes is my number five as well.
Worth mentioning in that press conference, yeah, though, that Nick Caserio, who I agree does not traditionally compliment people, did go out of his way to compliment Ross Blacklock and Max Sharping, which was...
was
polite. Let's just pretend
that's
it was
when
that.
You break up with somebody and they're more in love with you than you are with them.
Oh, okay.
And you're like, hey...
You're very familiar with
you're, them. Well, yeah.
damn.
All right, who's your number four?
number four.
It's not you, it's me. I can't. I'm so jealous of the girl you marry. She's so lucky.
I'm glad Sean went with where he went with his number five, because to transition back to Vanessa, Kenyon Green... If this offensive line is going to be mean and better, Kenyon Green's the guy to make it happen. I think this is the kind of influx of talent that you want on the interior, so that if this team is truly a running football team, Kenyon Green is going to be the one that is beating up defensive tackles, linebackers, and helping pave the way for a guy who might be my first most important Houston Texan this year.
You, number four. Sean.
Jalen Petrie.
Okay.
I think, he's just been so impressive. Everything anyone around the Texans says about Jalen Petrie is like almost over-the-top praise about how quickly he knows the defense, how much of a pro he is back there. It's like having a vet, not a rookie, da-da-da. And it gets me excited, and I want to see him. I want to see if it translates off the practice field into the games. And with him and Stingley, the number three pick, you know, that kind of combination, you know, if things work out, that's something you can build entire defense around, is having a shutdown corner and a free safety like that.
My number four is Laremy Tunsil.
Laremy Tunsil.
Barely played last year. We didn't know what was going on with the injury. What happens with him, I think, is going to determine a lot of what this line looks like. You have the angle of the veteran leadership. We know he's very quiet. He's not super vocal. But we need to see what Laremy Tunsil can do. We need to see if he's all in or if he's going to have another quote-unquote injury and then just like randomly not play. And what his stat. We know that he said he's committed to the Texans. I need to see it. And I need to see what Laremy Tunsil can do.
And he's got to protect that ass, though, of Davis Mills.
It is very crucial that Davis Mills is protected. Mm-hmm. He's a second-year quarterback. This is going to be his first full season under center. So it's very important that he has that protection and that it's adequate.
Have you talked to your Davis Mills about using protection?
Okay.
We all need to tell him.
I'm not even going to go there.
He needs a left tackle. I'm just saying. You need a good left tackle. So he needs to make sure that he plays well so that the left tackle stays, I don't know, committed.
Number three.
My number three is Brandon Cooks. This is easy. He's the best player on the team.
Yeah.
Same. That simple.
That was me too. My number three is Brandon Cooks as well. We already know what he can do. We already know that he's a good weapon for Davis Mills. So I think that he's part of the quote-unquote consistency of the regime.
Similar, but it's Damien Pierce. It's the rookie running back who is flying up fancy draft boards and rookie of the year charts. I'm not the first person to say this. It's the first time you get excited about Texans running back since Arian Foster, which sounds insane when you say it, and then you think, and you're like, kind of right. Damien Pierce, I think he could be the best player on the offense, or at least the most productive there with Cooks. I mean, it's 1-2, those guys.
Yes,
so give me the rookie, Damien Pierce.
All right, for my number two, I have Damien Pierce, actually. Oh. I have Cooks, and then I have Damien Pierce as number two. This is the year where we're going to determine what Mills can do. I think fully they're going to decide, are we all in on him or are we going to get a quarterback, whether it's Stroud, Young, who knows. But I think this is that year. And I think Damien Pierce is a big part of that. Are there building blocks, per se, that they can use for this rebuild? Could that combination, tandem, whatever, possibly be Mills and Damien Pierce? What's your number two?
My number two is Jalen Petrie. And I say Jalen Petrie because you look back at past Lovie Smith defenses, and there's generally been one guy running around like a psychopath, knocking
the
football out. Charles Peanut Tillman is one of my favorite players in the NFL from a decade ago. That was a guy who punched the football out perhaps better than any defensive player. Petrie always is around the ball. I like guys that are like that. That means that you could be opportunistic as you get more and more acclimated. And I feel like of all the players on the defense this year, the one that I think is most likely to have a regular impact, as opposed to Derek Stingley, who, best case scenario, people just aren't going to throw his way, it's Petrie flying around, being in the middle of the field, being the guy that's just around the ball, and maybe a Houston version of the Honey Badger that works Ooh. Out.
Sean, number two.
Derek Stingley, third overall pick. It's the first-round pick the Texans have had, I think, since Titus Howard. So it's very important that you nail it. And, I mean, by all accounts, I remember in college, he was game day ready from day one. As a freshman, he was probably the best player on the LSU Tigers defense that won national championship. Hopefully, he's had some injuries along the way, and hopefully that can still translate to the NFL, being ready for the next level. And, again, if it's your first-round pick in that many years, it has to be a good one. You cannot blow it. So Stingley, most important, or second most important Texan.
All right, let's all say our most important Texan on three. One, two, three.
Davis Mills.
Really?
Yeah, Damian Pierce.
Wow. You didn't even have Davis Mills on your top five?
No, I didn't have him on my top five. Look.
You don't have the quarterback.
No, because I don't think he's that good. I mean, we'll see what happens.
But isn't that
this
still
year.
Important?
Hot
yes.
Is it important if he's
it
bad?
It is. It is. Look, if this team is who they say they are, Lovie Smith wants to run the football.
They're who we thought they were.
Kenyon Green is going to be, if by the end of the year he's in the starting lineup, paving the way for Damian Pierce. This is a running football team, and ultimately this season, whether or not they're successful, whether or not they're competent, it's not going to be determined by Davis Mills. I feel like Mills could prove all of us wrong, but very likely Davis Mills is a guy who is here now and could be replaced next year, where Damian Pierce, to me, is the next 3 years of this team going to be probably the one that we're all drafting high in fantasy football leagues and the one that is determining whether or not this team is actually in a game at the end of it. If they can't run the football, they are going to struggle this season. If they can, then this team could annoy some other teams in a way that we saw to an extent from Philadelphia last year.
Yeah, Texans fans should be glad that Dan Mullen underutilized him and that he fell to the Texans. All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant is our NFL countdown, baby. We're giving you the biggest stories from around the league, and we continue to look for that Texans indie game coming up week one.
Years of research and innovation.
Innovation Map is the new voice of innovation in Houston.
Pretty cool, huh, Morty?
Covering startups, tech, energy, health, social impact, and more. Visit innovationmap.com today.
Do it now! Do it! Do it! Do it now!
We're ready for some football, baby!
The countdown to the NFL season continues with Vanessa and Gallant.
All right, I may not be very good at math, but I do know that it is the number one. There is one day left until the NFL season. Tomorrow we get Bills at Rams. Paul, who is your number one?
Well, look, once again, we have a weird numerical situation that we're in. Tomorrow I don't know what we're going to do because there's only been one, I think, guy who was that good. But we do have somebody in our backyard. It is Warren Moon, Houston Oilers quarterback, one of the first guests of the Vanessa and Gallant radio program, also played for the Minnesota Vikings, the Seattle Seahawks, and the canceled Edmonton Eskimos, of course, of the CFL. UW grad, and by the way, if you ever want to see an amazing picture, look up a picture of a young Warren Moon playing for the UW Huskies and being next to a very cute Husky, the mascot of UW, and he has the most glorious afro I think I've ever seen.
Love it.
It looks amazing.
Shout out to Warren Moon. All right, NFL season literally right around the corner, like as in tomorrow. We start out talking about the team that will be in town playing the Houston Texans week one. Zach Kiefer of The Athletic, who did the great podcast on Andrew Luck, tweeted out a quote from his article, which really highlighted Matt Ryan, how much we know that the team, the brass, they all believe in Matt Ryan. A constant in training camp, says Zach Kiefer, Colts players and coaches openly bringing up how different everything feels with Matt Ryan. And then he brings up Michael Pittman Jr.'s quote about Matt Ryan. It's night and day compared with last year, a.k.a. Carson Wentz. You know, last year we were out there running the plays, but we were basically just playing football. I mean, we would just run around and make plays. This year, we're trying to be organized, be at our sports spots and our depths, because that's how Matt likes it and how he commands it, and that's what he expects, so you better be there. Sounds like Matt Ryan is maybe more disciplined than Carson Wentz, which I don't think surprises anybody. Do you guys buy that it's that big of a difference?
There's a piece in The Athletic that's highlighting his presence in Indianapolis, and there's another story about him yelling at players, like getting pissed at them. And that just wasn't there with Carson Wentz last year. Does that make a remarkable difference? There's a part of me that feels like we are being gaslit and that he is being gassed up. He is still Matt Ryan, which is not to say he is a bad quarterback. It's to say he's an older version of Kirk Cousins, who has had seasons of success in the past, obviously won the MVP, but I don't think he is the same player. Is he better than Phillip Rivers in Indy? I think possibly. Is he better than Carson Wentz? Yes. I don't think that it's going to be a massive difference on the field. Off the field, sure. You can talk about that all you want, but still have to have a guy who can play.
On the field, totally agree. I do think it's a big difference in leadership. Carson Wentz, in both of his stops, Philadelphia and Indianapolis, was not known for being vocal, was not known for taking charge. But that does only go so far. The advantage, and I say advantage in quotes, Colts fans at least know where the brass stands because they have the probably most honest and open owner in the NFL who made it clear he was not happy with Carson Wentz's leadership. So it makes an easy angle for the media to then dive in more to that, if that makes sense. Will that win them more playoff games? I think that's the only thing that matters. I'm glad Matt Ryan's a better leader. I'm glad he's more vocal. I'm glad Reggie Wayne, who is now the wide receivers coach, compared him to Peyton Manning. Great. If they don't win playoff games, I'm not sure it really matters. Lance Zierlein thinks it matters, by the way. Lance Zierlein, who's on before us and works part-time for NFL Network, has Indianapolis winning the Super Bowl on NFL.com.
That was surprising to me. And I think that is entirely just based off of, hey, look, structurally, that organization has a lot of things going for it, and the quarterback has been the biggest problem. I think a lot of people like Chris Ballard as a general manager. I think a lot of people like Frank Reich as a head coach. And I wonder if this could be potentially, hey, at some point it's got to work out for this team, right?
Yeah, there has to be results.
I don't think Matt Ryan's going to be the one to deliver them. But maybe I'm wrong. Look, Frank Reich said, ooh, we haven't shown anything that we're going to do offensively going into week one of the year, where they'll play, of course, the Houston Texans in a couple of days, that they are doing things that are going to be completely different than they've done in the preseason. Sure, great. I will believe it when I see it. This is a Jonathan Taylor tailback team.
There you go. All right, so according to Albert Breer, who was on a show talking about the 49ers, quote, "While I've heard Trey Lance was a little annoyed in the immediate aftermath of Jimmy G's restructuring, he is a smart, mature kid who I believe can handle it. Truth is, if he couldn't, you might have bigger questions about where the 49ers are at the position." He then tried to walk it back a little bit.
He did try to walk it back a little bit. I mean, obviously you'd be annoyed if they brought back the guy that you were replacing, and now all of a sudden he's just lingering. Believe in lingerers, man. I hate lingerers, to quote Pineapple Express. This is, for Trey Lance, a very precarious situation, because I don't doubt Kyle Shanahan, should Lance struggle the first couple of games, will pull Lance. And now that would create a very complicated situation, much like we saw with Brian Flores, Tua Tagovailoa, and Ryan Fitzpatrick in Miami not too long ago.
All right, we have some breaking news. The Jets are going to start quarterback Joe Flacco on Sunday. That's per Ian Rappaport. Flacco set to face his old team, of course. Zach Wilson is progressing well with his knee, but is not quite ready. Jake Asman, where are you? Are you okay? Let's do a heart check.
Joe Flacco and the ultimate revenge tour begins. Joe Flacco, elite once. Joe Flacco, elite twice. We'll see on Sunday.
By the way, this is directly related to your old stop in Seattle. Tyler Lockett says Seahawks fans should not boo Russell Wilson. Thoughts, comments, concerns?
A column just came out today highlighting all of the things that I know that Russell Wilson's been doing over the last couple of years that have been irksome, to say the least. So you want to read that piece and understand why I am the way that I am? You'll know. They should boo the hell out of him. Boo the guy Forced his way
Boo
out of town.
Who, the guy that won you a Super Bowl?
Did he win them a Super Bowl?
He was the quarterback of the Super Bowl winning team.
He lost them a Super Bowl.
He lost one as well.
Almost lost them a game before they got to the next
but
Super Bowl, too.
But he still won a Super
Four
Bowl.
Four interceptions.
You boo, so you say boo him because of the way he left.
Yeah.
Yeah,
who cares? The Super Bowl happened. But, like, guess who else won that Super Bowl? Richard Sherman, Earl Thomas, Cam Chancellor, Marshawn Lynch. Like, there's a lot of other players that were a part of that team. T-E-A-M team. And if you read this article, you just get the sense that Russ was not a team guy anymore. Can he be that in Denver again? Sure, at first. Eventually, he'll get annoyed and do the same things that he's been doing in Seattle for much of his career.
All right. According to Matt Schneidman. He writes for the Green Bay Packers for The Athletic. Aaron Rodgers is wearing a Rodgers Lazard 2023 Make Green Bay Great Again t-shirt in the locker room yesterday.
Such a troll. I love it.
So here's my thing. Regardless, I don't care where you stand politically. It's more about the fact that Aaron Rodgers once again does something that he so clearly knows people will talk about.
Yeah, 100%. He's such a troll.
Rodgers Lazard 2023 Make Green Bay Great Again.
I like him now because this entire offseason.
You're the exact opposite of most people who liked Aaron Rodgers and have soured on him. You instead like the fact that he's what?
Do you know why I like him? Because everyone's soured on him. And I'm like, wait, you're souring on him because he said that he was immunized and no one followed up? Because when he answered that question, no matter what he said, he was going to get grilled, especially if he wasn't vaccinated. And then they tried to get him to dump on his teammates after the fact, too. Look, he's annoying in his own way. He whines about being a part of a team that was the best team wins and loss record-wise for two straight seasons about how they're not the nicest of people here in Green Bay. Well, okay, that's annoying. But I don't know. I like that he messes with people. Because some people believe he is this like extreme right-wing political person. Because
I don't think he's anything political. I just think that he's a contrarian that likes to do ayahuasca.
I agree. I totally agree with you there.
I think that if he lived in a city or a state that was more liberal, he would probably act more conservative. I think that he is a natural contrarian that likes to troll and make headlines.
But I don't blame him because of the way that people react so viscerally to him. I mean, I
Everything
kind of enjoy
he
it.
Does. A.J. Brown said he's, quote, ready to go to war for Jalen Hurts.
Okay, relax.
You don't like that? You don't like that intensity?
I mean,
what are your thoughts, Sean?
Oh, I love it. What?
You love it?
Ready to go to war?
Ready to go to war.
He's ready to go to war. What's a football game compared to war? The football game is going to be so much easier.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Lord.
If you're ranking players that you would want to go to war with, how far down on the list would you get before you got to Jalen Hurts? Jalen Hurts seems like he would be a fine leader.
No, I'm taking Aaron Donald as a shield.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to go because if I don't choose to go to war with Aaron Donald, like alongside, he's going to be on the other
side.
That's
a great point.
And he's going to rip my face off.
Aaron Donald is who I would go to war with.
Hurts is like the guy that William Defoe's character plays in Platoon. You know, like, seems like a good leader. I'd want to be behind him. Going to get backstabbed along the way. You need to have a murderer. And Aaron Donald is a killer. He has worked out in the offseason with knives.
A little Succession reference. You have to be a killer.
Mm-hmm.
Coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, you got to hear what one fired coach said about his payout. I personally love the attitude. Hint, hint, he's been on Vanessa and Gallant. Plus, a reporter claps back at Brian Kelly. That's coming up next.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool.
Welcome back to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
Vanessa Richardson, Paul Gallant, Sean Mapes behind the glass. As always, we have a new top 25 in the AP poll. The first one since the regular season, of course, began. Georgia moved up to number 2. Alabama remained at number 1. The Florida Gators, Paul.
Chomp, chomp.
Debuted at number 12.
I was very excited about that.
Yeah, that's cool.
I
pretend to like the Florida Gators because of Tom Petty, but that's my only affiliation.
Richardson, the quarterback for Florida, Anthony
my
Richardson.
Brother.
He is your brother.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you have two reasons to root for Florida.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know what?
I mean, sounds like your brother's
great.
Can I
don't really brothers? Anymore, yeah. But I root for him from afar.
You're referring from afar now.
Oh,
okay.
You want to stay objective.
Yeah.
Yeah, media. Yeah. Got it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Legitimately forgot about his existence until just this moment. Wow.
Wow.
He's really good. I'm pretty excited that they're actually using him, because we mentioned a little bit ago, you were talking about how Dan Mullen, the former head coach of Florida, misused Dameon Pierce. Dan Mullen also misused
grossly
Anthony Richardson. And my God, there were so many things that were frustrating about the Dan Mullen era of Florida. For the most part, no changes for any of the local teams. Texas A&M still at sixth. I thought it was possible that they slide back a little bit. I know that the way that they won maybe indicates otherwise. I'm just really, again, not in on Haynes King. And I'm curious as to what happens on Saturday when they play Appalachian State, given that Appalachian State did put up like 60-plus points and scored 40 points in the fourth quarter against UNC.
Is there a reason that Georgia is still number two, or is like didn't move to number one with what they did? They beat the 11th ranked team in the country, who's now, what are they? They're unranked now because they beat them 59-10 or 59-3.
Good question.
Like, if you can bump Florida up from unranked to 12, I think Georgia should be number one.
The defending national champs.
There you go.
And then their last game, they just beat someone by 50 points.
People are scared of Nick Saban. I think like the writers, they don't want Nick Saban to yell at
Nick
them
Saban
sternly.
And his wife,
I'm
Terry.
Ready to open my third eye. They got a big time matchup. You need number one versus unranked Texas.
There you go.
Need to sell some game day tickets.
All right, Brian Kelly held a press conference, and I'm over this guy already, and I was over him the minute he said family.
I was over him the minute that there was a kid that was up in a practice tower at Notre Dame
that fell over
in the middle of a storm.
The death was not good. That was a thing that was oddly swept under the rug.
There's
by
a
the
lot
way.
Of stuff with Brian Kelly, yeah. I think, that could lead you to think that the guy's
but when you look at how much money he got and the way he exited, it made for a very vindictive kind of, you know, attitude that some people have towards him. Here's Brian Kelly in a press conference yesterday.
We'll open it up to this late arriving media crowd that must have enjoyed the weekend. That's usually $10 that we put in the kitty. We'll have a big bash at the end of the year at my place.
Maybe if you win, I'll be
outside. I don't think it has anything to do with winning. I think it has to do with being on time.
Yeah, maybe if you win, I'll be on time. It's the best clapback by any reporter to a cocky coach ever.
I'll give him credit. I felt like he handled that well, and you could tell that he's from Massachusetts, because that is generally how someone will react to somebody.
Is he really?
Who comes back. Yeah, he's from Boston. So that
explains a lot, actually.
That is where you actually hear the Boston, as opposed to the Southern version of Brian Kelly. Does he have a better Southern accent than me? I do declare he does not. But
why doesn't he have a Boston accent?
It's a good question. I don't know.
Remember now that he's from Boston, because I remember when he did the Southern thing and everyone's like, where's he from? Oh, yeah, Boston.
Yeah. Very strange that he started speaking 1795
and I
Georgian.
I haven't even gotten all my wins yet.
Yeah, essentially like
was
that.
Was an exact quote from that press conference. The sad thing is that he was trying to have a sense of humor. With the late reporters coming in, we'll have put $10 in the kitty and have a party at the end of the year.
I mean, look, he's being sarcastic because that's what all of us are in Massachusetts. But if you're trying to ingratiate yourself to people in Louisiana who are pissed off about how LSU has fallen from 2019 being the national title winners, from being one of the best teams that we've seen in a really long time, I think, across college football that wasn't an Alabama team, to this, you are not building any goodwill for yourself, especially when you came in and you're the one that's saying, hey, like, I'm going to get this thing turned into a well-oiled machine. And then the first game, you're muffing punts. You're having extra points blocked. You're putting a guy out there to muff those punts, and then you're blaming him after the game as opposed to blaming yourself for putting them out there.
You're telling your special teams coordinator, who is the only coach that followed you from Notre Dame, to leave the game.
Yeah.
Sean Mapes, what say you?
I think he's 0-1. Like, can the press corps maybe simmer down a little bit? Like, I get that he's a jerk, and most of the time, like, he's, like you said, obviously making a joke. Someone pointed out on Twitter, he should just carry around, like, a little note card that just says, do not try to be funny. because the same thing happened last year after they lost to FSU at Notre Dame when he was the coach of Notre Dame, and he like butchered an old football quote about
yeah,
because you have to be asked about, hey, what do you think of your team's execution, and then say I'm for it. But he tried to like throw it off the glass to himself, be like, well, we talk a lot about execution and I would like to execute my players. And
we're just
like,
was whoa, so
dude.
Awkward.
That's not the joke. I kind of like it.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah. Well, you're going to like your Boston brethren.
I like a little
you,
dark
you
humor.
You know what? Hold on. Paul Gallant is the Brian Kelly of radio hosts because
Whoa.
He says,
well, I haven't killed a
he's
student.
From H-Town, but then also talks about how he has ties to Tampa. But then, oh, yeah, he likes Seattle because he spent 2 years in Seattle.
Yeah.
And he's from Boston.
Sorry, my dad left my mom and I had to
you
live to Florida
with my mom. You are Brian Kelly. You are the Brian Kelly.
Win some games and we'll feel
yeah.
bad about it.
Yeah, win some games. I haven't even won all my games yet. Somebody who actually is Southern and couldn't hide it if he tried. He was our first guest on Vanessa and Gallant the day we launched. We love us some Ed Ogeron. And he, too, after John Gruden, was at the Little Rock Touchdown Club and he talked about the day he was fired.
I'm so grateful of my time, fellas. You, that was my opportunity. You know, coaches got a shelf. Some coaches got 50 years. Some coaches got 12. Mine was 6. Good. I got to tell you, we had a meeting. Say, coach, things are not going well. No shit. Ray Charles can see that, brother. And they were good. And Scott Woodward is a friend of mine today. Really, really, a lot of respect for the way they handled me.
So what's next?
Well, I got to tell you this, though. Say, coach, you got $17.1 million on your contract. We're going to give it to you. I said, what time you want me to leave? What door you want me out of, brother?
What if we all had, first of all, let's talk about even Ray Charles could see that when they said things weren't going well. What if we all had Ed Ogeron's approach to life? I mean, he literally, it's like he didn't care that he got fired.
Would you, if you got that much money in a buyout?
Would I what?
Would you care?
No!
Yeah.
Oh my God.
That's what
it was like with David Coley. People were like, oh.
Thank you.
But he was used. Now, here's the thing. I do think that he was quote unquote used. But oh my God, his buyout, brother, go to Costa Rica with your wife, have fun with your grandkids, buy yourself a Porsche.
More of a Croatia guy. Croatia, probably a hot above
yeah,
Costa Rica.
Yeah, yeah. With
but,
the cigar. But yeah.
Oh yeah. Look, David Coley got so much of this. Oh, he's
good
a martyr.
Ogeron.
The Texans
good for
are evil.
David
and
Coley.
I'm glad you brought that up because that when I heard that, I was like, It's not bad to get bought out, especially when you're getting paid a ton of money. And there was some, I think, miscommunication about what Cully's buyout was at first, where at first it seemed like, oh, he's getting all of that money. Oh, wait, he's getting none of the money. Actually, he was getting most of the money. So it was somewhere in between. But whatever it was, I mean, it's damn good. You've been coaching your whole career. You're in your mid-60s. You've never actually had a substantial job. You get a long contract for 5 years. And the Texans decided, you know what? Like, we don't like what you did the first year, but we're going to pay you for your services and for your time and your trouble. Life is pretty damn good for a coach that's getting bought out.
It is, and both things can be true in the David Coley case, that he was maybe the buffer guy, the stopgap. It would have been worse had they hired McCown. I'll put it that way.
Oh my
that
God.
Would have been more of a narrative.
Yes, definitely.
So who's going to be at the Little Rock Touchdown Club next?
We
had John Gruden. We had Ed Ogeron.
Okay. Well, it has to be a coach that's like possibly been canceled, right?
Recently fired and or humiliated.
Recently Urban Meyer.
Yeah, that's the obvious.
He would
next
have
one.
To be one. He's on Fox, but it'd have to be him, right? He hasn't talked about everything that happened.
I was thinking either him or Bobby Petrino.
Oh,
Bobby
that's
Petrino
a good
has
one.
A, has a good chance.
Jim Tressel, you know, get the vest out of retirement.
Jim Tressel did nothing wrong. He got screwed.
Guys, what if we had Bobby Petrino on our show?
Can we?
I'd love that.
Can we ask him about motorcycles?
Yeah.
Neck braces,
interns, co-eds. All the good stuff. All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant.
Bob Knight.
Talk about what? Oh.
Woody Hayes.
If we had Bob Knight on the show, I'd pee my pants. Coming up, we're going to talk about some awards. We're going to make our predictions for the NFL season, which starts tomorrow,
Bill
by the way.
Ryan?
Who's going to be MVP? Who's going to be Defensive Player of the Year? And we definitely want your opinion on this, so make sure you stay tuned. First, let me tell you about my friends at BUSR. Football season starts tomorrow. Baseball full swing. Playoffs begin soon, by the way. There has never been a better time to sign up and start winning some cash. Here's what you do. Go to BUSR.com/ESPN. You can double your deposit within the first 24 hours. Do you have an NFL futures bet that you know will cash in? The Texans, by the way, they're over under 4.5 games. Do you think they're going to win more? Maybe less? How about this? You can still get the Astros at plus 400. Maybe you want to play roulette. Maybe you're more of a blackjack guy. The good news, you can do it all at BUSR.com/ESPN.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
At Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I got to say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August is finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.